Hello, and welcome to our latest installment of Opinions of Value, Valkyrie's very own virtual chat series. I'm Annie Schwab, head of product here at Valkyrie, and we're so glad you could join us for today's episode on tech innovations in eminent domain. This series was created to encourage open and honest dialogue about the health and state of the commercial real estate industry through the lens of commercial appraisers. Through Opinions of Value, we'll explore everything from the trends shaping the commercial real estate market at large to the challenges impacting the way valuers conduct business in this digital age. We're excited to dive into this month's episode on eminent domain with an amazing panel of valuation professionals, all of whom are recognized thought leaders in eminent domain and right-of-way. First up, we have Matthew Van Eck, who is a Senior Vice President with Kidder Matthews Valuation Advisory Services Group. Matthew, can you share some of your professional highlights?
Sure. Hi, everybody. I'm thrilled to be here. Thank you for having me. Again, Matthew Van Eck, Senior Vice President, Kidder Matthews in Irvine, California. I've been appraising since 2005, performing appraisals on a variety of different property types for different purposes, including eminent domain. I've worked in over 30 states. And I'm active in my local chapter of the Appraisal Institute in the IRWA.
Go Irvine. I'm broadcasting from Irvine as well. And Matthew, I think you have a recent accomplishment. Weren't you your newly elected president of IRWA's Orange County Executive Board?
Yeah, so most recently I got elected as president. Our chapter is the Orange County Chapter 67. So that has already started. We will have meetings starting in September, running throughout the year. So a bunch of guest speakers coming in, speaking to our chapter about specifically eminent domain issues. One of our speakers will be Mr. Eric Schneider, who I'll be attending later this year. And so it's a great group, a lot of different professionals that come together, and we learn and talk about eminent domain.
Fantastic. Okay. And perfect segue in. Next, we have Eric Schneider, a senior appraiser with Jones Roach in Carignella. Eric, tell us a little more about yourself.
Yeah, certainly. Appreciate the opportunity to be here. I work for a boutique appraisal firm in San Diego, California. Our firm specializes in primarily litigation-based work across the country. And a lot of that work includes right-of-way and eminent domain-related matters. Another specialty practice that we are involved in is forensic review, and a lot of that involves eminent domain. So I really appreciate the opportunity to talk about what I do and share some of our insights into our business and what we do on a day-to-day basis.
Wonderful. Well, I'm glad you're here. And I actually saw you speak at the latest IRWA National Conference.
No, it was a lot of fun.
I was standing. It was standing room only.
There were a lot of people that wanted to know about the review aspect. That's what I spoke about. Matt's colleagues at IRWA OC, Ryan Hargrove, and another local appraiser named Chrissy Santalacido, both have extensive review experience. And it's a part of our business that needs a lot of attention because we do our appraisal work, and there are usually more than one set of eyes looking at that work to make sure that things are credible and they check out. So it's a great opportunity to share that with a lot of different people back in Denver.
Yes, it was a very well-attended and well-liked session. So thank you for sharing your knowledge.
Sure.
And rounding out our incredible panel is Angela Hernandez, a designated appraiser with Bender Rosenthal. Angela, tell us more about your background.
Yeah, thank you for having me. My name is Angela Hernandez, MAI designated appraiser here from Sacramento, California. I work for Bender Rosenthal. We are a right-of-way appraisal firm. We also offer a variety of other right-of-way type services. I've been appraising for roughly 10 years, eight of those being strictly in eminent domain, pre-condemnation, and right-of-way.
Wow, you got in early.
I did.
I can't wait. So a little later, we're going to talk about what your areas of expertise are, the specialization areas, and really why you got into eminent domain and why you stay there. So I'm really excited. Okay. So I know we're going to have a fantastic discussion today, and I so appreciate you all taking the time to chat with us. As I mentioned in this episode, we're exploring the topic of eminent domain valuations with a particular emphasis on the role technology plays in this complex appraisal sector. Now, as you're aware, eminent domain is a hot topic in today's market. So infrastructure development initiatives have surged. That's driving demand for eminent domain proceedings nationwide. Additionally, evolving legal standards, Eric's expertise, have increased the complexity of many cases, leading to involved and extended litigation processes. So with mounting challenges and increased volume, all of us are looking for ways to streamline our businesses and drive efficiency. And that's where technology can play an important role for valuation professionals. Now, just as technology has revolutionized the general appraisal industry, it too can drive significant progress in eminent domain in areas such as data collection and processing, precise property analytics, and rapid report production. And so with that, let's jump in and talk eminent domain. Angela, why don't you kick us off? Let's start for everybody here, because I know there's a lot of people watching that are new-ish to eminent domain. So let's start by defining exactly what eminent domain valuations entail and what some of the different practice variations are within eminent domain.
Great. Yeah, thank you for this opportunity. Really, eminent domain work entails establishing the fair market value for a proposed acquisition. Sometimes that can be a full acquisition or an appraisal of the entire property. Other times it can be a partial take analysis where the agency is proposing to acquire a portion of the property. Whether a part take analysis, you have to really fully analyze the remainder parcel and being able to really understand how that project is going to impact the property. And that needs to be done in California. So both before and after benefits, and benefits can really only offset damages for California work. Some specialties in eminent domain work could be based on project types, whether that be railroad projects, water projects, pipeline projects. There's a variety of different possible specialties with eminent domain work.
Fantastic.
Yep. And certainly, just to jump on a little bit of what Angela said, specialization can really come in the form of the methodology as well. The methodology we use in eminent domain is different than, a standard appraisal for, say, lending purposes. There's a lot of rules that we need to follow, and those rules can be different if it's the issue is related to a federal taking or a state taking. So we've got federal and state rules for sure. And so specialization really also comes down to understanding the appropriate rules to follow. So in California, we've got the civil code of the code of civil procedure, which outlines a number of those rules. You also have in that section the definition of fair market value. And so for eminent domain work, at least in California, a part of the definition of fair market value is highest price, as opposed to, say, most probable price in a different format. So we're really, as experts, really needing to understand what the rules are in the jurisdiction you're working in.
Okay. I would say that there are two distinct categories in appraisals for right-of-way and eminent domain purposes. One is at the acquisition level. There's an agency that needs a new bridge or a new road. And so an appraisal will be done to estimate what the value of those rights being acquired are. The next level, if the property owner just so happens to disagree with that opinion and a condemnation action is filed and it goes through the eminent domain process, then the events start all over again, where there is an appraisal for the agency side that may or may not go to trial. There's an appraisal for the property owner. In essence, there are at least three appraisals that can be done for a particular process. And so having specialty at the acquisition level, knowing what the rules are, having expertise at that second level where there's testimony taken, real understanding of the case law, like what Matt was referring to, is needed. A couple of different nuances that make it different from appraisal work for lending purposes or estate and tax or other different realms.
Fantastic. Okay. So Lots of things to consider. It sounds like we know the appraisal sector in general has a lot of rules, but even more apply within eminent domain, and they can vary state by state, or if it's a state versus federal engagement. And then, as I understand it, as you were speaking to Eric, once you get into the litigation piece, if you can't reach agreement, then that's like a whole new ball game.
Certainly.
Correct?
A lot of the times, the parties can come together and come to an agreement about the value of those rights being acquired. But there are some instances where, depending on the methodology used or the data considered, the value opinions can be millions of dollars apart. I've seen instances where one side is at 4 million and the other side is at 100 million. And it comes down to a couple of different things. But just understanding that methodology, what rules are in place, what jurisdiction you're in, what Matt alluded to is there are certain rules depending on appraising property at the federal level versus in your individual state. Just having that knowledge and expertise is critical when you're doing this type of work.
Okay, so many reasons why eminent domain is really considered a specialty. Anyone have anything else to build on? I mean, do you all practice across areas, or do you really find that people have to specialize within eminent domain to truly deliver the value that's expected?
I think it's different for each of us, right? So a lot of my work is local. It's California, and specifically Southern California. But I'm often representing either an agency or a property owner, and so it's a local issue for me. I imagine, for Eric, who's coming in on the litigation side, he might be reviewing reports all over the country.
Yeah, certainly. There may be certain rules that need to be known or followed, and you can get an assistance from your client. I mean, you definitely have to be confident to do the kind of work if it's out of town. But our work spreads across the country. Federal matters, local matters, a lot of that on the forensic review side, but some appraisal work as well. It really starts with that foundation, which is, all right, what is the appraisal problem that needs to be solved? And am I the right fit for that particular assignment?
I'm similar to Matt. I do work mostly except on Northern California, but I do also work in Southern California from time to time. So my license is in California, and a lot of my work is agency. However, I do also represent property owners as well.
Okay, so lots of specialization within eminent domain. So understand the different areas, and then for those people who are looking at this as a potential area to expand, it really is about understanding what you can specialize in and then learn all the nuances of that.
Certainly.
Okay, so getting a little more personal, what do you like best about practicing within eminent domain? Why did you choose that as your professional focus? Stay in it. And maybe you can share, you already talked a little bit about the specific areas that you practice in, but maybe highlight a few of the key traits that you think are critical for success in your area of specialization. Eric, do you want to kick us off? I know you are highly specialized.
Special.
We're also special.
What I like about this kind of work is that it really makes you think. You
I
are
like that.
analyzing rights for a project that's not built yet. And so trying to understand what that looks like and what impacts, if any, that project has on a property, it's really a brain teaser sometimes. I've yet to come across the same set of facts for a particular assignment in my 15 years of doing this. It's really unique every time. There's certainly challenges, and we're all part of the greater picture, which is there will be this project built that's meant to serve the public good. And to be a part of that's kind of exciting. I'm sure everyone has that story where you're driving on the freeway and you say, "Hey, I appraised that over there." And then whoever you're with doesn't really care. But it's just something that you're a part of. And that's what makes it interesting and unique and fun.
You just have to share something weird about the building, right? Do you know what they had
Yeah,
in the
yeah.
basement?
And I have
Still
young
doesn't
kids,
matter.
and
They
they can
don't.
hardly care less, but
My wife could care less
it
about
keeps
how
the
many times
conversation
I've
going.
prayed something. 100%.
Unless you're in the car with another appraiser, I don't think anyone
No one
really
appreciates it,
understands
but
that.
I'll jump in. I enjoy, like Erica was saying, each issue is completely different from the next, and so there's a challenge every time getting up to speed, trying to understand the issues of the project and how you're going to deal with it from a reasonable standpoint. The other aspect that I enjoy, although it can be somewhat painful, is your work is immediately challenged. Unlike working for, say, an estate where the attorney likes the value, doesn't care about the report, it goes in a file and it's gone, and you never hear about it from again. In eminent domain work, you're going to hear about your results really quickly. You're going to get feedback from your client, and then immediately from the other side. There's going to be a challenge as far as whether they think your work is correct or you're providing good arguments, but there's a chance to learn from that and improve the way you tell a story, improve the way that you create arguments in your appraisal work. So there's immediate feedback and ability to learn from that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I've learned quite a lot with my ability to explain certain aspects of the right-of-way process, especially the remainder, from going through the external review process and really having an external reviewer read my assignment and say, I think you could beef it up a little bit more here. Let's talk about this. And it's really only benefited me. So the multiple reviews is something that is definitely beneficial with right-of-way work, but it can be tough.
Okay, so it sounds like it's tough, but there's a lot of personal benefits, and then it's very mentally challenging, and there's a high level of rigor, and there's a very high level of diversity around the sorts of things that you will, the sorts of problems you will get to solve for. You guys are all like chief problem solvers, it sounds like to me.
The role of
So
an
it
appraiser
comes
is
down to that.
you're
It's identifying the
a
right
problem
problem. And sometimes in matters like this, the problem could be identified differently by the parties. And so that's one unique aspect of this is what facts am I working with? I'm valuing these certain rights, but do I have all the facts? Is access going to be allowed in the after condition for this particular property? Will this impact any development potential? How long is that project? Am I just going to sit on this vacant piece of land for 5 to 10 years while this project gets built? There's a lot of different aspects that are protracted sometimes, and just being able to understand all that when doing your work is something that is also unique. A lot of times for other types of appraisal work, you go in to the appraisal, it may take a day, it may take a few weeks, and then you're out, and then you may not see it again. There are projects that I'm still working on that have been going on for years, and there will
Years.
go on for much longer than that, just because of the complexities with the projects being built or the certain facts that are in place. So just having that understanding that sometimes these things can take a while is also a unique aspect of this type of appraisal work.
That's how we all start out, right? We all start out at that level, very minimal understanding of what the issues are. But through being involved in these organizations and going to speaking engagements or speaking yourself, your ability to learn more about the topic grows each time.
Absolutely. I love that about the appraisal industry in general, is you all share so much knowledge compared to other industries. So it's really nice to see how much you all band together. Okay, we're gonna go more macro now. So let's talk about the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act of 2021. I want to hear your perspective on how you think this is affecting the valuation market, and really what you each predict in terms of engagement volume, type of engagements, as well as when we think that we'll start seeing some of the impact from this act hit. So Matthew, why don't you start us off?
Sure. Yeah, it as you know, the bill was passed I think over a year from now. But it's allocated billions of dollars for various types of projects, including transportation. I personally haven't worked on any project yet that has been funded by this act, but I know it's coming down the pike. It's interesting, and I learned this at the national conference. If you go on the White House website, just whitehouse.gov, you can search for a project map, and it gives you the location of where some of that funding to date has been allocated. And so you can really see kind of a clustering of where these projects are occurring, and it's all over the country. So there are going to be needs for appraisal work on an ongoing basis all over the country for the foreseeable future.
Do you remember what some of those hotbed areas are? For I think these are the initial projects.
Yeah, so certainly in my, I looked firstly in my area. So
Of
there's
course.
throughout California, there's projects along the eastern seaboard. There's clustering of this. If you zoom in, it does look like there's projects going on everywhere.
Everyone loves a good
And
map, too.
yeah.
No, it's really slick. And when Matt brought it up the other day, I had to take a look myself. One of the projects going on in Southern California is a multi-billion dollar allocation for the Purple Line. The Purple Line is a subway system in downtown LA. It's going to connect Santa Monica to downtown. It's going to go through Beverly Hills. We're doing quite a bit of work on that line. And it's just interesting to see, that act that's nationwide happening in our backyard. And LA is unique in particular because in a few years there's going to be this big Olympic game going on in 2028. And so I know that the region is really preparing for that, and they want to make sure that there is enough sufficient, reliable public transportation across Southern California to make sure that people can get where they need to go and cheer on their country.
Eric, that's really interesting. So, I think I just hadn't connected the two yet, but of course, there's a lot of infrastructure investment anywhere there are these huge, events, these huge global events. In addition to the Purple Line or the, metro expansion, for those of you who aren't in Southern California, like most of us, do you think there'll be increased eminent domain activity to do these local improvement projects because of the Olympics?
Certainly. Yeah, not just the Purple Line alone. I know that other lines are being extended to the outer regions of Los Angeles County and beyond for public transportation. And it's not just something where the Olympics come and go and then we're done. It's being built in a manner to make sure that for the next foreseeable future, residents and workers and people that live here can get where they need to go in an efficient time and not have to spend hours on end in their vehicle. So it's a unique opportunity. If properties can be acquired and the fair market value can be established and agreed upon, then that's great. There may be instances in which you do have to file condemnation action and use eminent domain. And then there is another opportunity for real estate appraisers with this expertise to be able to assist their client to determine that fair market value.
Angela, what do you think? What are you guys seeing in your firm?
Yeah, a lot of the work that I've been doing hasn't directly been impacted by this particular act. However, something that we should note is if there is federal funding on a project, there's generally going to be federal appraisal requirements that you have to comply with, whether that be the Uniform Act, whether that be Yellow Book, whether that be something else. So, making sure that you fully understand all the players in this particular project will really be helpful going forward for appraisers.
That's a really good point.
And if I can jump
Okay.
in really quick,
Yes.
Yellow Book is a colloquial term that's kind of well known in our little niche, but it has to do with the Uniform Appraisal Standards for Federal Land Acquisition. So like what Angela and Matt have been talking about, there are certain standards that one must apply to do certain valuation work. And so if it's done at what we're calling the federal level, that's a whole nother set of facts and rules and regulations that one must follow when appraising property. As we've talked about, you generally have to appraise the property twice, one with
Oh, interesting.
without the rights in place and one with the rights in place, or with the property taken and without the property taken. And depending on the jurisdiction you're in and what standards you have to follow, those rules can be different. So just one quick little tidbit that adds to the complexity of doing this kind of work.
Okay, everyone needs to level up. I see an IRWA session or two.
I think a lot of firms are starting to expand nationally. And to Angela's point earlier, if there's federal funds, there may be an obligation to follow those standards. And if you don't, you'll look pretty silly. And you'll also do your client a major disservice. So got to make sure you know what playground you're playing in.
And then it won't go well, and you have to go to court.
That's right. Take your
That
ball and go home.
those are the themes that I took away. I
Yeah.
was like, federal focus, litigation.
Yeah.
How to do it right so you don't end up losing in court. Okay. So I think really exciting time to be in eminent domain. You know, it's always been fulfilling for those of you in the space, but there is a lot of, you know, activity and development within the sector recently. So not to burst everyone's bubbles, but we all know it's not always easy street, right? So I know we've touched on some of the challenges, but let's just really unpack like the key challenges that appraisers face when they're working on eminent domain cases. So, Eric, why don't you lead us off on this one?
Some of the challenges that I see with this kind of work in particular is you're not just doing one appraisal. As we've talked about, you're appraising the property twice, and sometimes more than twice. Depending on a certain fact pattern that's in place, you may have to provide your client several different scenarios. You may not have all of the information either related to the project or the information that the property owner is holding close to their vest. If you're working for the agency and it's for an acquisition and it is likely going to go to trial, the other side's counsel may not be very forthcoming with certain information. So you do the best you can. Those are the kind of challenges that I see. To Matt's point earlier, the work that we do is going to be scrutinized by parties that need to make you look bad so that they can advocate for their client and get the desirable outcome. And so there's a certain level of detail that has to be accounted for when you're doing this appraisal report, because one word or one line or one miscalculation can really result in a value that's not credible and cannot serve your client. So those are kind of the big challenges that I see with doing this kind of work.
Yeah, I would also say data is certainly a difficult aspect of this work. We can all value a property in its before condition using ample data. But you've got a partial take of, say, an easement, subsurface rights, air rights. These are rights that don't normally transfer in the market. There's not a data source like CoStar that tracks this information. Finding that data, making sure it's reliable so you can include in your report and it's defensible is a difficult aspect of this job. The data does exist, it's out there. A lot of the times it's influenced by projects, either through the threat of eminent domain or negotiations. And so you're not able to use some of that information. But really having a hold on what's available out there, getting a good understanding of what it consists of and being able to apply it appropriately is a significant aspect of this work.
Okay.
I interpreted that question in a little bit of a different way. So one of those key challenges that I see is I do a lot of agency work. So I'm oftentimes the first person that the property owner gets to talk to about this project, any specific project. Right. So
Fun.
it can be quite intimidating sometimes. So being able to thoroughly explain what the project is, the needs of the project, and understand the engineering, understanding why these are the needs of the project, and being able to answer to the best of your ability all of the property owner's questions. And even if you can't answer them on site, make sure that they're answered in your report, because if they do get a copy of your report at some time, possibly, they got to be in there. So. I think that's definitely a big challenge as well.
Wow. So, I mean, we've run the whole gamut with the challenges, from highly analytical to, like you were talking about, Angela, the very like personal side of it, needing to show a lot of empathy. I think a lot of times appraisers aren't in the role where they need to interface with the, people impacted. And so that just really spans a lot of different skill sets and really, I think, stretches the professionals.
Yeah,
Go
we're
ahead.
required to, if we're working with the agency side, we're required to see if the property owner will want to go out on our inspection and be with us. And that's a perfect time to ask them questions about their property, try to understand the history of it, how they think the project may impact them, so you can consider those aspects in your report and not just overlook it, because eventually that information is going to come out and it could be an issue down the line. So being able to interact with property owners early on in the assignment is crucial for a successful outcome.
Do some primary real-time data collection. Okay. A few other things that I actually heard you guys mention earlier too, just to, I think, pull this all together is, Eric, you were talking about that duration element. I think that can add a lot of complexity when you're working on an engagement, is just how long it can draw out and how you need to build upon your prior analyses and models.
Certainly. A lot of things come to mind with respect to that. One is just remembering what you did. Sometimes these things take a very long time. So just from a practical standpoint, making sure that you have great notes from your property inspection, taking lots of photos, making sure you're talking to the right people, looking at market data at the time and talking to market participants because the deal was done a week ago and they remember what they did, as opposed to I'm calling about sales that took place 15 years ago and surprisingly with good results. But just if you have an understanding of how long a project will be, which sometimes you do and sometimes you don't, just having all that information put together in a consistent manner, an efficient manner, that's very helpful. The other thing I'll say is sometimes the project may change. There may be additional rights that need to be acquired. There may be rights that need to be abandoned. There may be rows that need to be reconfigured. And so just being on top of that, having an understanding of what am I actually valuing, that is very critical. And it becomes more critical when you have a longer fuse to start and complete that appraisal.
Absolutely. Okay, so we're throwing fluidity into the mix too. Moving target. Perfect segue into our next section, which is really about the tech side. So let's talk about how technology impacts the efficiency and accuracy of eminent domain appraisals, and I think how it helps us overcome some of the challenges we just all talked about. So, Angela, do you want to kick us off?
Yeah, sounds great. So, as you're probably aware, we at Bender Rosenthal are kind of utilizing Valkyrie and utilizing a right-of-way template that we're getting together. And that template's really extremely beneficial because I can effectively change the size of the acquisition area if it does change in one spot, update all, and it'll update that space. Square footage everywhere throughout my report. So things like that, being able to maintain accuracy, is extremely helpful with technology and its contribution to eminent domain. Other tech products that we utilize often are things like GIS systems, other mapping programs.
Our firm uses LandVision as one of our mapping tools, and it has
Same.
really good breakdown of property boundary lines, and then you can overlay demographics, traffic counts to specific locations. An example that I've used it in eminent domain work was in a review that I did. I didn't, as a reviewer, I didn't get a chance to go on site for the property inspection when the original appraiser went out and saw it. But through my calculation of, checking through the steps, making sure the calculations are accurate, the taking area was appropriate, I was able to use LandVision as a mapping tool. There's measurement tools in there that you can, find areas of certain takings. And so it really helps on a high level. Obviously, you need to double check in other sources, but it does provide that ability to get comfortable with numbers if you haven't been on site. Yeah, other technology that I think that people are using, not so much I'm using, but certainly drone footage. I work
Oh.
in a brokerage company where they use drone footage all the time for marketing purposes. We can use that on our inspections to get good visibility of a large property. Really only comes down to cost. If it makes sense to include that in your either your estimate or if a client wants to pay for that. But it certainly can be fairly helpful, especially when you have a very large project or large property.
Yeah, it's kind of a far walk, huh?
Yeah.
I think we kind of hit the big points. I would also say that Google is your friend in this instance, just being able to look at historical images, street images, all the usual suspects for data services like CoStar Group and your local MLS. What I find very surprising, and delighting is, or delightful is sometimes the city or county website in the jurisdiction that you're working with has a wealth of information for zoning, land use regulations, flood regulations. That is a great start in any assignment that you work on, just to see, all right, where am I? What are the restrictions or regulations that are impacting this property, which all flow to the highest and best use? That is a great tool online. It's really helpful when cities and municipalities can put that or make that available.
Yeah, here in Southern California, LA has phenomenal online GIS resources and property data.
Definitely.
Yeah, another one I'll jump on real quick, and maybe Angela, she had a similar story, I think, is we're starting to see a lot more engineers and surveyors go on site and make 3D mapping of properties. And so I'm starting to see that in some of my jobs. I think Angela did as well.
Yeah, I worked on a rail project and they were able to show me in a 3D, like artificial intelligence rendering of how the rail is going to look once it's constructed. And that was extremely helpful in my determination and my evaluation of the remainder property.
Yeah,
Wow, nice.
we can actually see what the project's going to look like. You can visualize what any potential damages may exist or impacts to the property in the after condition. It's huge to be able to see that as opposed to, yeah, okay, maybe the road's going to go here. I've got this 2D map that Caltrans has provided me. It's got a bunch of colors and numbers. But otherwise, you've got to come up with what you think the impact's going to be. So these new imaging that is available to us is will be helpful going forward.
That's incredible. It makes these things that are hypothetical so much more tangible. And I think, Angela, to what you were saying, is you noted that the partial takings are actually the more complicated scenarios. So I'm assuming if everybody can be reading off the same page more about what the end result would be, then there's less, Eric, I'm assuming there's less risk of litigation because there's less subjectivity to it.
One other interesting aspect of this is the reliance on other experts. Like as soon as we start talking about the different renderings of a project, we work with civil engineers, traffic specialists, sometimes with the same person, that can draw maps of truck accessibility or circulation on a site. And sometimes one side has that kind of an expert, the other side has a different expert, and their opinions might be different, and they're looking at the same set of facts. So not only does it add to the complexity of the kind of work that we do and the reliance on certain people that have expertise well beyond me as a real estate appraiser, just being able to have that data and that expertise and those exhibits to look at and understand, right, how is this going to impact the property? That's really critical. The other point that Matt made that I think is really crucial is when you have drone footage, when you have 3D renderings of a railroad, like what Angela was talking about, sometimes those pieces of data or images or files would be critical in the trial setting when you're trying to show the trier fact, whether that be a judge or jury, why your opinion is credible, having that story behind you and having those images and saying, all right, this is the impact and this is the information that I considered. All that's really, really critical for the kind of work that we do, especially at that litigation and trial level.
It's really exciting. I think when you think about really how much technology comes to bear in this space, and again, it helps you manage, I think the appraisal process in general generates a lot of data, more than an average like other industries, but eminent domain is even more because of the duration. And like you were saying, comps don't have to just be recent comps. It's going back further in time. And there's so many other considerations of value that just generates a lot more data points in general. So it can help manage that. It can help get everyone on the same page with understanding hypotheticals and translating them into, you know, the future state. Maps are a great way to communicate information. So I love it that eminent domain has really embraced mapping.
Oh, of course. Definitely.
Yeah. One of the first things we get is a map. Yeah. We're taking a bunch of information on it. We've got to decipher that. It's critical to the work we do.
Yeah. Okay. So on technology, just looking forward, let's fast forward like 5 years. We've talked about a lot of impactful technologies. And of course, now I think anyone who is interested in eminent domain is even more excited because you're like, what? Drones? but what do we think might be the next most impactful technologies?
I'm thinking, you know, just seeing the recent launch of the Apple headset, the availability of virtual reality or augmented reality. We were just talking about engineers and surveyors giving us 3D images or computer programs. Imagine putting on a headset and be able to feel like you're at the property, looking at it, seeing a project complete, being able to walk around that project, see how, you know, trucks might flow through the site. You know, that seems like a very near future bit of technology that you know, it'll come down to cost whether we implement it or not. But it certainly is something that'll be applicable to our work.
I think that, you know, ChatGPT and writing software or writing algorithms have definitely exploded recently. And a lot of what we do is trying to convey our thoughts to our reader about why the value is the way it is. If there's a way to make that more efficient, that's great. It'll be interesting to see how that gets implemented on the valuation side. In other words, I'm looking at all this data, or machine is looking at all this data, and an adjustment is derived from that data. Is that my opinion? Is that the computer's opinion? You know, we're opining to value, we as the appraiser. And so being able to look at that data in a more efficient manner, I hope that continues to evolve and make it better for us to look at. But it may come to a point in some instances. I know that AVMs have been around for a long time, but just having machine learning determine the value of certain rights, that could be something that's in the future. And then whether or not that is credible, that could be a whole nother field. As having someone going through the data to look at it and say, all right, this makes sense, or it makes no sense at all. So you got to go back to the drawing board and figure out why that number is the way it is.
Angela, anything to add?
I can't wait till I can put on Matt's 3D goggles and inspect a property post-construction. That seems extremely helpful.
I think it's really clear that technology is a must-have on eminent domain engagements. But to wrap things up and come full circle, let's go to the, you know, more human side of it. And I'd love to hear as experts, some of your wisdom for those professionals that are interested in looking more deeply at eminent domain and possibly pursuing it as a practice area. So what recommendations do you have for them? Obviously, this is a highly nuanced space, so.
I would say, getting the foundation of education first. That is critical, and it is the most accessible. The Appraisal Institute has condemnation appraising related classes. Matt, correct me if I'm wrong, I think there's something coming up in Southern California in the next month or two.
Costa Mesa.
The International Right-of-Way Association is another resource for education. It's also another opportunity to meet fellow right-of-way professionals. The local engagements that occur frequently throughout the year in certain areas are a great resource for contacts for real estate appraisers to perhaps become a mentor, for real estate attorneys and agencies as potential clients, just the chance to network and gain that exposure is really critical. It's not like traditional lending work where you log on to a platform and you submit a fee and a turn time. There are instances, particularly on the litigation side, where you are hired for who you are and the experience that you have. And so having that education, talking to professionals to try to get that experience. I work for a firm that specializes in it because that's what I wanted to do. Those are kind of the things that I would recommend if one is interested in doing this kind of work.
Fantastic.
I think one of the best advice I got from a mentor of mine was join these organizations, but don't just show up, don't go to the meetings, get involved, become a committee lead, volunteer your time, go through the leadership chairs, get that experience. Because really, it is an education process. It's also networking. And what better way to get to know these people than spending more time with them? Sitting on committees, sitting on board meetings, discussing the issues. These are all membership-run organizations. So putting in the time, getting really to know people is a huge part about what's helped me grow professionally is volunteering your time and being there.
Angela, what do you think?
Yeah, I think my experiences are extremely similar. I'm involved in my local appraisal institute chapter, and being able to be involved, get to know who in your area does that similar type of eminent domain pre-condemnation work is extremely helpful. I have an instance where I was working with a particular individual on a committee, and then they ended up reviewing my work, and they were like, "Oh, it's so exciting to actually see some of your work." So it's really helpful to have that engagement with them, and be able to put, a face to the email or a face to the email address. And it's extremely helpful to have that personal connection. And that's done through these organizations like Appraisal Institute and IRWA. And I have a little bit of a different, I guess, take as well. I guess I'm a second generation right of way worker. So my dad is a right of way agent. Yeah. So I got involved in right of way work early on, and I actually got it from the opposite side somewhat. My dad is one of those people who takes our appraisals and is the one who explains it to the owner and then hears all of their concerns. So he really is who hardened me and is like, "No, you have to address this and this and this and this and this. These owners, this are their concerns. This is so." So I think that's having a fortunate for me, having that personal connection was extremely helpful for me in getting into this field.
Absolutely. Okay, so I think what I'm hearing is this area is really refreshing. There's a small community, relationships matter here. It's not like a lot of the appraisal work today, as you were mentioning, Eric, that's just awarded on turn time and fees. Your expertise, your relationships, your experience all matters. So while you can't have me just jump in and start doing eminent domain jobs, if you put the time in, it can really be very rewarding. And it sounds like, you can have a very healthy flow of work going forward. And definitely lean into the educational opportunities, not only because it's so complex, even beyond a standard appraisal, but because of that relationship aspect.
That too, and I think case law always, I mean, is advancing, is changing. There's new regulations that you have to be privy to. So, also just being on top of it because you have to know what's the most up-to-date information.
Yeah,
and they discuss those topics at these meetings.
Yes, as I've
We
learned.
were a couple of us were at the International Right-of-Way Conference in Denver this last year. Next year, it's going to be in Long Beach, California.
I
So
know.
there'll be people talking about relevant topics. I think one of the themes is is future technology renewables. And so they're going to
Mm-hmm.
discuss that in this upcoming conference. But it's a chance to learn, and also there's opportunities for speaking engagements because they I know they'll be looking for people to fill out their docket.
Wonderful.
The other thing I'd like to mention is, and I think you touched on this briefly, but because of the duration of these projects, it tends to be acyclical or not necessarily impacted by the market cycles that are going on. We're kind of in a dip right now where interest rates are really high. But some of these projects have been in place for years. And so there's a lot of opportunities to do this kind of work. The appraisal volume is available. It's just having that expertise and knowing who those people are. Those people can be found at the organizations that we've talked about. I know that there are certain legal events that have seminars specializing in eminent domain. Taking advantage of those and meeting people there is something else that I would recommend too.
To get out of the house. Get out of the
Yeah.
house, get out from behind our computers, no Zoom, connect
Get
with
some
people.
sun, some vitamin D.
Well, at the conference, the IRWA conference in Southern California, come on down.
There you go.
Okay, so last question, and all of you have mentioned heavily the role of mentorship. So, one of the things I love about the appraisal industry is that there is so much knowledge sharing, and I think mentorship plays a huge role in building the next generation of our professionals. But it seems like it is even more important here. So, let's just recap, what is a little different about the mentorship within eminent domain and why it's so valuable?
Yeah, I'll jump in real quick. For appraisers, having a mentor is certainly a significant part about getting trained in your career. It's really hard to come up and just only do the education and then try and start getting your own assignments. So we get trained by seasoned appraisers. I've been lucky to have a couple mentors that I've worked with throughout my career that have elevated me and pushed me through the process to get me experience. One in particular has brought me in on meetings where we're discussing, our appraisal report, trying to provide the support for it against the opposing side, either attorneys or the agency side or a property owner side. But seeing what's discussed in those meetings, getting an understanding how the process is worked through, how these individuals talk to each other and support their conclusions is huge in getting myself comfortable with those scenarios when I'm that person, when my mentor's not there, and I've got to be the one to support my work, give the justification, and then do it in a thoughtful manner. So getting that sort of repetition experience is crucial, and having a good mentor that will help you with that is key for our success.
I love it. Anyone
Yeah,
have
I've
anything else to add on mentorship?
certainly. I currently work for a couple of folks who have been my mentor for a lot of years. One of which wrote the condemnation appraisal book for the Institute. And so just having that experience, being able to learn something new every day. I still learning something every day, which is really amazing. But there are other people in our evaluation community that just want to help. And so picking up the phone and being able to call them is something that has been valuable to me. And I'm trying to pay it forward as well. I get calls around the country to talk about valuation problems. And us being the nerds that we are, we happily pick up and talk about it. But it's critical to have people in your corner to learn how to do this business because it is very complex. There's a lot of moving parts. Being able to understand the rules and the case law and the evidence code and all of that. It's a lot easier to do it with someone mentoring you than it is to try to figure it out on your own. So getting involved in those organizations is a great start to that.
And I think in terms of my mentorship, I've had so many mentors come through. I work at, Bender Rosenthal, and we do primarily agency work, but we also do a lot of other type of work. And my mentors have not only been appraisers, they've been acquisition agents, they've been relocation agents,
I
they've
love
been
that.
other right-of-way agents. So I think being able to understand how everybody fits in this large project is extremely helpful as well.
Great. Okay, so to sum it all up, exciting space. I think it's a space with a lot of opportunity in it, especially now when some of the other appraisal work is a bit more challenging because of macroeconomic conditions. But you need to invest the time to get in. And I think both formal and what I heard is informal mentorships are really valuable. And then Angela, to what you've spoken to is think broadly about who can be your mentor, because there's so many different facets of professionals in this industry and they can lend very interesting perspectives like those on the agency side.
Right.
Oh, well, this has been fantastic. We've covered a lot of territory today. And I know, for one, I'm much smarter on all things eminent domain. I want to give a big thank you to our panelists, Matt, Eric, and Angela, for sharing your valuable insights, personal experiences. And I hope you all enjoyed today's Opinions of Value. Until next time, I'm Annie Schwab, and this has been Opinions of Value.